Pilgrims and Strangers.
We gather together at conventions primarily to sit at the Lord's feet. If we were Israelites, we would go up to the Temple Mount in Jerusalem on the various time, holy days of the year, and we would expect Jehovah's presence there because he dwelt between the cherubims. Well, when the temple was destroyed in AD 70, a new concept was taking place, which Jesus announced to them, to the Samaritan woman at the well, and he said, there is going to be a time when it's not just going to be centralized at Jerusalem or as the Samaritans worshipped at Mount Gerizim. He says, those who worship God are going to worship him in spirit and in truth, in every place, not just in Jerusalem. So for us, this is the Holy Temple Mount. We have come together, separated ourselves from the secular world so that we may concentrate upon the Lord's word and will. And that is why we come together, to hear a message from the Lord, to gain new insights for our daily living, and to be spiritually elevated, both on the doctrinal or intellectual level, but also, very importantly, on the emotional, devotional level. Because to be successful, we have to have both parts take part in our life. Not just the intellectualism, but the feelings of closeness to the Lord and the desire to do his will is very, very essential. Pilgrims and strangers, as we sang in the hymn, that word pilgrim and strangers is taken from the scriptures in 1 Peter 2:11. It says, dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims. And then he goes on giving them a message. The word pilgrim has in it such a depth of meaning. Pilgrim. It suggests transientness. If you were living in a palace, you would not be a pilgrim. You would be very much at home there. Or even in a home, in a established home somewhere. But if you were living in a tent or a tabernacle, you would be a pilgrim. It's transient. And it's very important for me and for you, I feel, to get that feeling on a daily basis. We know it, we sing the hymn, we understand it, but pilgrim is a mentality, the pilgrim mentality, as compared to the opposite, which is the at-home in the flesh mentality. We're going to gravitate to one or the other. We may not mean to, we may not intend to, but the forces that are around us are going to draw us either to the pilgrim mentality or to the at-home in the flesh mentality. And it is very important for us to have the attitude that it is transient. We are not here for long or for good or forever. We're here, we have an assignment that we are accomplishing in the flesh, which is to get those experiences which the Heavenly Father's providence sees as best for us, so that we can be instruments of him in the millennial age to carry on the work of the rehabilitation of the world of mankind. That is an amazingly big assignment. It is a lifelong assignment, but it is temporary. And we profit from all of our experiences, always keeping in mind that to be a member of the sympathetic high priesthood, the Lord may ask us to go through some very difficult experiences. And if we are rightly trained by them, then we will be able to be used by him to assist in the world. So the pilgrim mentality is very, very important. We're going to touch on that quite a bit in our discussion. Paul mentions, you'll find that certain scriptures will gravitate toward one mentality or the other, or one mental attitude than the other. Paul, in 2 Corinthians 5:6, says, therefore we are always confident, knowing that while we are at home in the body, we are absent from the Lord. And there you have the thought. Always remember that we are pilgrims and strangers in this earth. How does a pilgrim live? Does he live like the king in a palace? Does he live like the established citizen whose domain is on earth? No, we're not supposed to. are, yes, we are of the earth, earthly, and we are in the world, but not of it. But our attitude should be very different than that of the rest of the world. What should we be doing in our pilgrimage journey? First of all, reminding ourselves that we are pilgrims. Don't get too much at home in the flesh. And realize that the Lord wants us to devote a good portion of our time and affections to the doing of His will, which involves, we can do His will in many ways, but the ones that are more direct are when we do something for the Lord, for the truth, or for the brethren. These are the general guidelines of pilgrim activity. When you travel far for a convention, you are doing that to be close to the Lord. So that's part of your pilgrim responsibility. I see a group of pilgrims here today. Not too many live in this city, but we are all pilgrims. We do it for the Lord and the truth. Time and efforts in study of the Word is very important so that we may defend His Word. And also for the brethren. When you do something for the brethren, you are doing something for the Lord. Jesus said, if you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren, ye have done it unto me. Now, the more of these three activities we can do, in every day we should have some of them. Try to see that there's in our pie, that there's a good slice. Sure, many have to work for 8 hours and others have other activities and assignments. But see to it that there's a large slice of the work for the Lord through meditation and prayer, the truth, and for the brethren. Paul additionally mentions in reading the Amplified 2 Corinthians 5:10, he says, for we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ so that each one may receive his pay according to what he has done in the body, whether good or evil. And these are some of the things that Paul is mentioning that we've done. Considering what his purpose and motives have been, as a pilgrim, the Lord is going to look at your motives and my motives. That is a very difficult thing because we always have two faces. We have one face which we are public with and our inner thoughts and feelings. And the Lord can get into the inner intents of the heart. And therefore, it is very important for us to see that the work of grace continues on in our hearts because the Lord will see it. So our purposes and motives is number one, what he has achieved, been busy with, and given himself and his attention to accomplishing. The Lord eventually is going to pay us according to our works as to how much time and effort we have given to working for the Lord, the truth, and the brethren. I like the way Amplify says, how much we've achieved. Well, we don't necessarily have to achieve great things. In fact, it's obvious that the Lord does not expect us to achieve great things. He is interested in our efforts. And so it says, what you have achieved, what you have been busy with. So long as you're busy with it, it doesn't matter if you succeed. So long as you are busy, and I are busy with doing the service to the Lord, the truth, and the brethren, he accepts it as if it was done. And given himself and his attention to accomplishing. We all choose. Every day we have choices. We decide what we're going to do with our time management. And this is part of our stewardship. To see to it as pilgrims, we shouldn't be at home in the flesh all day long. It isn't right. We have to apportion time to the Lord, to prayer, as well as study and fellowship. For a minute or two, our main study this morning is going to be on the 84th Psalm. But before we get there, the 84th Psalm, by the way, is what was known as a pilgrim psalm, a pilgrimage psalm. In Israel, according to Deuteronomy, each male of the Jewish nation had to appear three times at Jerusalem, at the Temple Mount, before God. Now, their ways of traveling were, in those centuries, was very, very slow, and on foot, largely. no matter where they were, 10 miles, 20 miles, 30 miles, 40 miles, 50 miles from Jerusalem, they had to travel to Jerusalem, and they did it in groups. And they call these the pilgrimage festivals, in which groups from a city, say the city of Nazareth, which is up in Galilee, they would get together, the kinsmen and all the relatives, and they would say, let's travel together. It's going to take 3 days or 4 days with all of our equipment, and they would travel together. And so these were called pilgrimage festivals, because they left their homes and they became pilgrims and strangers for a period of time. And you and I, and this is the picture for you and me, we are on this pilgrimage journey, but in our case it takes a lifetime. And we are not going to natural Jerusalem, although many of us did go there about a year ago for a pilgrimage, but we are headed toward the New Jerusalem. The New Jerusalem, which is going to be coming down from God out of heaven and touching earth. The church, John in Revelation says, come and I will show you the New Jerusalem. And he says, this is the bride, the Lamb's wife, which is the New Jerusalem. They, Christ, head and body, are going to be the government which will rule over earth. And this is where we're heading to. Not a geographical area like in days of old, but to the New Jerusalem, which is above us, which will eventually come down. Now, that New Jerusalem has not touched earth yet. Oh, yes, the kingdom, we believe, has a phase of the kingdom has been established with the return of Christ in the heavens, the Zion phase. There are two phases, the Zion phase and the Jerusalem phase. But that New Jerusalem hasn't been selected yet. So it has not yet touched earth. But when it does touch earth, those who have been faithful will be with it, and they will perform their assistance work to Christ for the 1,000 years of rehabilitating the world of mankind. And that is where our pilgrimage is in the 84th Psalm. Just for a minute or two, I want to touch briefly on another book in which the word pilgrim is used, Bunyan's classical book, Pilgrim's Progress. In it, many of you are familiar with it. Brother Russell, I was surprised, half a dozen times he refers to characters in the Pilgrim's Progress. We're studying the fifth volume, and he refers to Doubting Castle and Vanity Fair and various other things that are in the book. In this book, there is a pilgrim which represents you and me, who is traveling from, he's left his natural city and he's headed toward the celestial city, which would be Jerusalem. And John Bunyan, by the way, was a minister. He was persecuted for his beliefs and he was in prison for 13 years. And in his prison experiences, he wrote Pilgrim's Progress. Plenty of time. Sometimes the Lord knows we need companionship. Sometimes he knows we need the wilderness. John Bunyan was in the wilderness of isolation for 13 years. But what did he do with it? Did he pout? Did he complain and murmur? Here I am doing the Lord's work and I end up in prison? No, no, no. That's not the pilgrim mentality. Pilgrim mentality is, the Lord brought me here and gave me this experience, and it's my duty to get the best lesson I can from it. And so he wrote of this Christian who leaves his home and goes toward the celestial city. The phrases are very interesting and unique. As he travels this road, there are many detours and there are many allurements to take him off the path, and there's one place that he calls the Slough of Despond. That if you slide into this ditch, you will be in the Slough of Despond. And that has so much spiritual meaning to us. The devil, the adversary, is constantly trying to get us off the narrow way into a side way of discouragement, of depression, of distress. And in the Lord's providence, we all slide into that slough periodically. We should try to do it as little as we can, and we should use all of our spiritual skills and resources to get ourselves out of it by quoting the precious promises. And as Jesus did in his hour of temptation, he quoted the scriptures 3 times when the adversary raised problems for him. But plan on it. You're going to be in that slough of despond periodically. All of God's people have been in it. Even Jesus was in the slough of despond. He says, "My soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even unto death." Have you ever been that distressed? Listen to Paul's word when he visited it. He said, 2 Corinthians 1:8 from the Amplified, he says, "For we do not want you to be uninformed, brethren, about the affliction and oppressing distress which befell us in the province of Asia, how we were so utterly and unbearably weighed down and crushed that we despaired even of life itself." Paul, how uncharacteristic. But as a pilgrim, he just got up, dusted himself off, and kept going. He didn't stay in this state of depression and despair for long, but he visited it, and so do we. And in the ancient prophets, as you read the prophets, Jonah and Elijah, on several occasions they said, "Better death than life. Take me. I don't want to live anymore." Now that's a very depressed state to be in. But the prophets have been in it, and we have to learn to get a foothold and get out of it as soon as possible, because the Lord doesn't want us to live there in this slough of despond. But it's well to know that we will spend some time there. Doubting Castle, we all have problems at times when we come, and the one who lived there was a giant called Despair. He lived in Doubting Castle. The adversary is always after us to put doubts in our mind, questions about how well we're doing. Am I going in the right direction? Am I making enough progress? I'm very sorry to say that I'm troubled when I hear in the testimony that a person will get up and say, "I'm just no good. I don't understand why the Lord has anything to do with me. I'm just not a good Christian." They are a good Christian. I've known these brethren, but the adversary has just raised doubts as to how good they're doing. And they should not be comparing themselves how well they're doing to others, but are they doing their best only? So let us get past the doubting castle quickly. There are many other ones. This pilgrim, as he travels, sees Mr. Worldly Wise Man. You'll meet him. If you read a newspaper, you'll meet him. If you watch television, you'll meet him. If you work with the world, you'll meet Mr. Worldly Wise Man. They will tell you what is appropriate and fine for you to do. Not from God's viewpoint, but from man's viewpoint. And even Jesus met Mr. Worldly Wise Man when he said to Peter, when Jesus said he was going to Jerusalem, again, he was making a pilgrimage to Jerusalem, Peter said, "No. There's a warrant out for your arrest. Don't do it. I advise you against it." Jesus said to him, "Peter, you stand in my way, Peter, when you look at things from man's viewpoint, not God's viewpoint." That's what Mr. Worldly Wise Man does. They have a wisdom all their own. Their wisdom says, "Me first. If I have anything left over, I'll do it for others. Me first, survival, selfishness, self-preoccupation." That's Mr. Worldly Wise Man. The Lord says, God comes first. The pilgrim says, God comes first. Whatever his will is, I'm going to do it. And I'm going to coordinate all my activities with a view in mind of being a pilgrim, the pilgrim mentality. Well, hurrying on, in Deuteronomy 16:16 is the place we referred to earlier, where it says, "Three times in a year shall all thy males appear before the Lord my God in the place which ye shall choose. In the feast," and he names the three festivals: the Feast of Unleavened Bread, or Passover, which is in the spring; the Feast of Weeks, or Pentecost, which is 50 days after Passover; and the third one, which is in the fall, is the Feast of Tabernacles. And as we discuss these psalms, let us picture these groups of Israelites traveling from their homes to Jerusalem, ascending the Temple Mount, and in the sanctity of the temple courts, feeling the closeness of Jehovah's presence. It's interesting that it was one of these three, it was the Passover pilgrimage festival, which Jesus came to as a 12-year-old to Jerusalem with his mother and father. And there were many kinsmen. In fact, there were so many that Joseph and Mary just put him with the young people, and they said, you stay with your young people, and we'll stay with the older people, and we'll all just travel there, and we'll get there. We're all together. And Jesus, when he went to the temple, it was so much at home in the temple that he didn't want to leave. And he needed to find out more. He knew about his miraculous birth. He knew about the fact that the angel said that this was to be good news, a great joy to all people. But he didn't have all the pieces put together because he was not yet spiritually begotten. So he lingered in God's temple. And finally, his parents, after they had traveled a day, they had to turn around, make another day's trip back, and they found him in the temple. And he submitted himself in going back with them at that time. But it was one of these three festivals that was obligatory upon the males that Jesus was there for. Now, there are about 15 psalms that are called pilgrimage psalms. They are from Psalms 121 to 134, and many of them touch the theme of traveling to Jerusalem, and some of them are very specific. The psalms are not all by David, by any means. Various people would write these psalms on a trip to Jerusalem, and then year after year, the people would chant them and sing them and recite them as they would go on later trips. For instance, the Psalms 121 catches the theme of the pilgrim when he says, I will lift mine eyes unto the hills, from whence cometh my strength. My help cometh from the Lord which had made heaven and earth. As you know, Jerusalem is on a high part of Israel, I think 2,500 feet above sea level. So when he says to the hills, they're going to the high country, especially from the valleys of the north and near the sea coast. They would be going up. They would constantly be going up to Jerusalem, unto the hills. Psalms 122 says, I was glad when they said unto me, let us go up to the house of the Lord. Our feet are standing within thy gates, O Jerusalem. Thou art built as a city that is compacted together, whither the tribes went up, even the tribes of the Lord, as a testimony unto Israel, to give thanks unto the name of the Lord. All the tribes went up. Let us go up to the house of the Lord. How they would look forward to it, though, these three trips, because they would come very close to fellowshipping with God through the rituals and through the various services that were at the temple. The 42nd Psalm, just take a minute on it, is one of the pilgrimage festival psalms. But in this case, it is the psalm of a pathetic lament by one who was not able to go that particular year. There were times when there were illnesses and other events that came up, and a person couldn't go, and the Lord understood that. But he wanted to go. And listen to his words as he says that he knew he couldn't go. Maybe you recall you wanted to go to a convention. I know I have. And it just wasn't able to. And you would feel so very badly about it. And you would want to go. The brethren are there. I want to, but it's just not possible this time. And so the author of the psalm says, as the hart panteth after the water brooks, so panteth my soul after thee, O God. My soul thirsteth for God, for the living God. When shall I come and appear before thee? That phrase, appear before thee, is picked up from Deuteronomy, that three times you must appear before the Lord. To them it was an idiom. They knew what it meant. It was going on this pilgrimage festival. They go from strength to strength, it says in the 84th Psalm, everyone that appeareth before God. But this person wasn't able to go. And he goes on to say in another verse, my tears have been my meat day and night, while they continually say unto me. In this case, he may even have been in Babylon in exile. He says, while they continually say unto me, where is thy God? When I remember these things, I pour out my soul in me, for I had gone with the multitude. I went with them to the house of the Lord with the voice of joy and praise, with a multitude that kept holy day. Now, the 84th Psalm is also, it is considered one of the very finest of the pilgrimage festival psalms. As it opens, the pilgrim is stirred inwardly by the sweep of the whole Temple Mount. And those of you who have been to Israel and have been there can well sense the excitement of getting up to the high ground above the city of Jerusalem. And in those days, Solomon's Temple was there, or Zerubbabel's Temple. And the Ark of the Testimony was there, and the cherubim was there. And the author of this 84th Psalm is stirred by the very feeling that he will have when he first sets, after traveling for days and days and days, of first getting a view of the Temple Mount. I'll read part of it, and then we'll try to draw a few lessons from it. How amiable are thy tabernacles, O Lord of hosts! My soul longeth, yea, even fainteth, for the courts of the Lord. My heart and my flesh crieth out for the living God. Then he goes on to say, this is his anticipation, and now he comes to the Temple Mount. What does he see? Yea, the sparrow hath found an house, and the swallow a nest for herself, where she may lay her young. Then a better translation says, so also have I found thine altars, O Lord of hosts, my King and my God. The author says, how wonderful. As he climbs the Temple Mount, he sees birds, the robins, the sparrows, the swallows. They're busy making their nests, and there's little baby sparrows and swallows, and they're bringing food to them, all within the courts of Jehovah. Because, as you know, it was many acres on the top of the Temple Mount, and there were trees, and there were buildings, and it was the temple. And he says, isn't this great? He says, these are spiritual birds. They've come to make their nest within the confines of the Lord's temple. He says, I too have found a nest, a home, and which is thine altars. And as a pilgrim, let us keep that in mind, that our home is on the Temple Mount, the New Jerusalem, the spiritual life which we have chosen. We must give adequate time and attention and affections for the spiritual things, and not be swallowed up by the everyday occurrences. Going on, he says, blessed are they that dwell in thy house, they will be still praising thee, Selah. Blessed is the man whose strength is in thee, in whose heart are the ways of them. And the sixth verse, we want to pause on that verse, because there's a great spiritual lesson there, we feel. Who passing through the valley of Baca, make it a well, the rain also filleth the pools. Now, first of all, which festival was this that this pilgrim was on? Was it Passover, Pentecost, or Feast of Tabernacles? Two were in the spring, one was in the fall. The better translation of this verse, such as Amplified, Rotherham, Revised Version, and many others, it doesn't say the rains filled the pool, it says the early rains clothed it with blessing. It was in the fall. The early rains came in the fall. And so this pilgrim was going to Jerusalem in the fall, the Feast of Tabernacles, which in itself is a magnificent lesson. The Lord said, after you've been in Egypt for all these years, 215 years, I'm going to liberate you and bring you to your own country. But I want you to have a pilgrim mentality. Once you get there, at the Feast of Tabernacle, every year, you are to build little tents. If you have a house, you just build a little tent outside in your backyard, a little lean-to, and you are to spend time there every year during the Feast of Tabernacle. Why? The Lord had to use physical things, reminders, to the Israelite to get them to remember their pilgrim mentality. Because, he says, for 40 years you were pilgrims and strangers, you were wanderers through the wilderness, but now that you've come to your land and you have houses and you have wealth, don't forget you were pilgrims. You're a pilgrim nation. How important that is for you and me, to ever keep that lesson in mind. We are pilgrims. We are not residents of the land. We're here transient. Our home is somewhere else, and we're traveling there. And so this particular psalm was for the Feast of Tabernacles, and incidentally, it was an agricultural. The in-gathering was an agricultural festival, and it's very similar in America to our agricultural festival of Thanksgiving Day. It was based on the Jewish Thanksgiving, which was Feast of the Tabernacles, where they would gather together and thank the Lord for the crop, and as Americans did in our early history, and it was based upon the Jewish. So when you're having Thanksgiving in the future, remember, you're following the type of the Israelites and their Feast of Tabernacles. And incidentally, our forefathers were called pilgrims. The pilgrims. They were pilgrims. They had a pilgrim mentality. They wanted to get away from the tyranny of Europe to worship God in the way that they saw fit, which their consciences led them. They too were pilgrims. We too have been recently released from slavery, as the Israelites were. We were all slaves. Everyone in Adam's family was a slave. He was, whether you know it or not, they were slaves to sin, selfishness, and eventually death. But we've been liberated. By justification, we are now liberated from Adamic condemnation. We are given access to God, which we did not have as a non-consecrated, non-spirit-begotten person. And so we've been liberated, and now we are pilgrims, just as Israel was liberated, and they were pilgrims. Now, we'd like to give some thoughts on the Valley of Baca. What is the Valley of Baca? They make it a well. The word Baca means balsam trees. Somewhat in doubt, another translator says it's a Hebrew word that means weeping. So it's translated different ways, either as Baca or through the Valley of Weeping. They make it a place of springs, as one translation puts it. A balsam tree is very much like your palm trees here. They can live on an extremely small amount of water. The palm trees can live in the deserts, in the oases where there's miles of deserts. And this valley that they were traveling through, now picture these pilgrims going up to Jerusalem, and much of Israel is a wasteland, desolate. And as they walked through this valley of Baca or of balsam trees, they made it a spring. How did they do it? They did it mentally, by having their mind focused on the temple, and they did not observe the difficulty of going through this valley. They make it a place of springs. Notice the phrase, they make it. It was not a place of springs. It was a very dry, thirsty land, and they had to pass it in order to get there, but the pilgrim mentality made it a place of springs. How does that apply to you and me? When we are overtaken in many trials and tribulations, the scripture says that, my brethren, count it all joy when ye fall into divers temptations. Trials are not joyous. But the scripture says, count it all joy. You have to count it or reckon it as part of the experiences necessary for you to get to Zion to undergo this Valley of Baca experiences. And you make it a place of springs. And I make it a place of springs. Two men looked out of a prison bars. One saw dirt, one saw stars. One had his eye upon God's will, and the other one was earthbound. And all he could see was the dirt and the mud. What do you see when we look out? We've got to see the springs of water, not the dry, thirsty land. And we can count it all joy because we know that the patience developed during these trials, if we are rightly trained by them, will make us assistance to the Lord in the days ahead. Paul and Silas, with backs still lacerated, sang hymns of praise at midnight. Passing through the valley of Baca, they made it a place of springs. Would you have sung psalms on your back lacerated without the proper facilities to first aid to treat the wounds? They did. Paul, on another occasion in Philippians 1:12, said, "Now I want you to know, brethren, that what has happened to me, this imprisonment in Rome, has actually only served to advance the spreading of the good news of the gospel. If you were taken by Nero and thrown into prison, never knowing if you're going to see tomorrow, would you look on the bright side of it?" He says, "I want you to know that I've only had more opportunities since I came here. Under house arrest, I can have people come in, I can preach to them, I can write letters. Passing through the valley of Baca, he makes it a place of springs. Jesus, for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despised the shame. For the joy that the pilgrim mentality of being with his Father, being reunited, he passed through the valley and made it a place of springs. He took the worst that could happen to him, crucifixion, and made it into the best that could happen for mankind, deliverance from Adamic condemnation." I'd like to give two examples of some brethren. You know, we've heard the expression, "I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day." Well, in that spirit, there was one brother, whom most of you know, who learned that he was on the verge of having very serious physical problems. He was going to lose the use of his lower body and his lower legs, paralyzed. And he was still going through tests, but he remarked to someone, "If I become paralyzed and become a paraplegic," he says, "you're going to see I will try to be the most active paraplegic you have ever seen." And his initials are Carl Hackensick. Passing through the valley of Baca, he makes it a place of springs. Another brother, I'm told, in Chicago, his name is Brother Carpentier, was bedridden for over 30 years. And we're told that when the brethren came, he cheered all the brethren up. And he had his bed close to the front window. He was on the first floor, and he had to move his bed there. And when people walked by in the summertime and the window was open, he gave them a witness. Passing through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. It is not a place of springs. Trials are not pleasant, but they're grievous. But they make it. That's what the pilgrim mentality will make us do, will help us to do. It will make the trials into a place of springs. Listen to the hymn. It says, "Let sorrow do its work," hymn 172. "Let sorrow do its work, send grief and pain. Sweet are thy messengers, glad their refrain, when they can sing with me." This is the pilgrim mentality. "When they can sing with me, more love, O Christ, to thee, more love to thee, more love to thee." Again, 106. "Blessed be the tempest, kind the storm, that drives me nearer home." Going through the valley of Baca, they make it a place of springs. And so, the brethren, as we go on our pilgrimage journey, let us always, every day, remind ourselves that we are pilgrims and strangers. Let us not get too much at home in the flesh. Let us see to it. Let us discipline our habits, that we give time and attention and prayer and meditation to the spiritual things. The saying goes that only one life will soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. Only what's done for the Lord, the truth, and the brethren will have lasting importance. All of our experiences, we have to be faithful to all the experiences, but these in particular, we've got to have our treasure in heaven. Put aside time and effort along these lines. And so may the Lord help us as we go through our trials to count it all joy that soon we will, with the Lord, in the New Jerusalem, it will touch earth. It has not touched earth today. It has been set up. The spiritual phase has been set up, we believe. In the spiritual phase, the first resurrection has taken place. But when it touches earth is when the reign of righteousness will begin, and when the earth will find out that there is a kingdom already set up, and they will get the blessings. And you and I, if faithful, will be part of that work to assist the world in the millennial age. And so may the Lord bless us and help us to do the Lord's will now, so that we may be at home with him in the temple and may the Lord add his blessing.